From theunce.com, this is the Unce Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunce.com. Hello and welcome to the Unce Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. My guest today is Linus Eklow, better known as Style of I. Coming up in the lion's den of house music, if you will, Eklow was born and raised in Stockholm. Although Sweden is the epicenter of Euro house, he was first involved in dub, minimal, and drum and bass circles before really hitting the full-on mainstream dance circuit. With releases on Classic and John Dalbach's Picadol recordings, he soon caught the eye of major industry movers and shakers, including the Swedish House Mafia, and Style of I's latest single, We Are Boys, was just released on Sebastian Ingrosso's Refume label. Today's episode is brought to you by the Workout Music Festival, taking place this weekend at Zane Shawnee Caverns in Bellefontaine, Ohio, featuring Yodo, Future Rock, Janover, Rovi, Freakbot, and of course headliners The Works, along with a slew of other acts. Tickets are still available at theworkoutfestival.com, and that's work with an E for all the uninitiated. Okay, let's get to the interview with Linus Eklow. I read that you were raised on jazz and soul. Tell me about your musical childhood. Who were some of the artists that you grew up on?
Well, I started playing on like pans and pots and stuff in the kitchen when I was really young. And then I went into a lot of like had the rock bands and all that when I was like 12, 13 and got very interested in jazz and soul. So I thought for a while that I was going to be like a professional jazz drummer, but the thing was like after all the practicing at the same time, I bought my first Mac and just started producing, and that was like, yeah, was so much more fun. But to answer your question, I mean, the artists, it was anything from like Roland Kirk to Miles Davis and a lot of Stevie Wonder and, you know, and Aretha Franklin, and you know, always like into the Prince, the more funky stuff like Prince, and basically anything. I was listening to a lot of African jazz at the moment as well, like Fela Kuti, his soul-y stuff as well, and you know, so I was hearing a lot of different music at that age.
Do you feel like your background as a drummer has really helped you hone in on what it is to produce, in essence, beats and rhythm and really tie that in? Were you a technically trained drummer? Were you practicing and learning from masters, or were you more self-taught and just playing through feel?
No, I was going to a bunch of schools and having some masters and stuff, but the thing is, you know, I think obviously that gave me a lot in terms of like what works and what this thing, some things comes quite easily for me. I kind of like hear it in my head and just replay it. Drums are always, for these days, I think it's a lot about just trying to keep it simple and just fill in the sort of spaces in between. And not get too technical about the rhythms that you play. Like for instance, with jazz drummers, it's very like sometimes it's very sort of complicated rhythms, and I don't think that always fits very well in dance music.
And I imagine that listening to Afro pop of the 70s and really digging into 70s funk and soul from America, and then also all this jazz, I imagine that gave you the technical ability, and you could translate that technical ability into compositions and making your productions very, I guess, not complex since you were going for a more simple approach, but you certainly could add a lot of layers and make sure that everything not only filled out the sound, but didn't get in the way and didn't overcomplicate like you were talking about.
No, definitely. That's right on point, because I think from hearing so many different like from music from all over the spectrum, like that really, really helps in like seeing what, you know, what works and what doesn't. But when I started out, I always put too many layers on there, you know, like for the drums, I always had like multiple layers that I just ended up muting in the end. And I'm still struggling with not adding too much. You know, it's always a learning process for me. I would never say like, oh, that this is the perfect beat or anything. I'm always trying to improve that side, you know.
That must have been difficult for you. You know, you're a drummer, you're around all this, you know, music that is so complex and has so many parts, and you have to come over to dance music eventually, and it's such not a simple necessarily beat. I mean, you can make the beat as simple as you want, but a lot of the time you're locked into that 4/4. Is that why when you were first producing, you sort of stayed away from that typical, you know, 4-on-the-floor dance beat and sort of experimented more with other styles that weren't necessarily dance music?
Yeah, no, for sure. It was almost like a relief when I started listening to electronic music, yeah, and hearing like that there wasn't many rules. For me, that was the essence. When I started, you know, I was hearing a lot of like underground resistance stuff, and there wasn't any, like, I never noticed like the 4/4 thing. In the beginning, I was more like open to like breakbeats and all that stuff. It wasn't until like years later that I picked up on like the house stuff and found my sort of new home in house and techno. So in the beginning, it was all about experimenting and trying out. And I think that's really important to have those years. At least for me, I can look back at these years and say like that was the best school I ever went to, you know, like that.
The second single from Style of Eye on Sebastian Ingrosso's Refume label. Let's talk about your early productions, which fell into maybe the dub and even minimal categories, and then you eventually moved into drum and bass. I have to imagine this wasn't in line with the trends in Stockholm at the time.
No, I mean, dance music was like house and drum and bass and this the sort of sub-genres of these. They weren't very big, you know. We didn't really have a scene. We had small, very small parties with like maybe 50 to 100 people, and I was also too young to actually go to these things. So my sort of first experience with raves was actually in North Carolina in the States. You know, I lived there for a year and started going to these big big sort of raves, and that really like introduced me to, and I got bitten by that trip, you know.
Yeah. When you first started producing, is that what you wanted to do, or did you after seeing these raves think, okay, it's not just about creating the music, but also being a DJ and being able to control a rave and pick the right different tunes, not only your own stuff, but play the music of others and really work it into a set that could move a crowd, that could keep a party going all night? Did you have a concept of what it is you wanted to do, or you just were essentially bitten and knew, whatever it is, I have to get into the scene somehow. It doesn't matter what I do.
Yeah, no, that was the case. I went home and tried to, you know, fund for a pair of turntables and a mixer, you know, and just started with that. And at the same time that I was like producing on freeware, and well, not really producing, but you know, like making beats on, mm-hmm. on free software and stuff. And so, yeah, I was admiring the DJs, how they, you know, the sort of vibe they created. You know, I remember went to, I think it was Club Vinyl in New York. I went to see Little Lou Vega like on his on a birthday of his, and it was just mad, you know, for me as a Swede to see that whole vibe around the, I think it was called Body and Soul Night or something. And it's like, mm-hmm. just like really, I'd never seen that before in Sweden. You know, how people just came for a full day and danced without any drugs or anything. That certainly made a mark on me, you know.
And then when you started DJing at clubs and you started to get into that scene, did it take you a while to bring your own music into your sets? Were you maybe spinning the house and drum and bass of the time that was popular, or of the artist that you were trying to emulate? Or from the beginning, did you think, okay, you know, when I go out to this club and I'm going to spin, I want to play my own music?
Yeah, I still have trouble playing my own stuff, actually. Yeah, I do. It's like, it's fair to the fans that I play it, but sometimes it's just like, you know, each and every song for me has its chapter, and it's mostly in the studio where it's very exciting. But now I'm really growing into it, like seeing it from a different perspective, how I can make my own edits of my own tracks and make it more, you know, exciting. But in the when I first started out, I didn't even have any tracks of my own to play, so I was just like dreaming of one day maybe I can have a track, you know. And when I released my first record on Classic, the Recorders label, I didn't even know, you know, the label, so it was just a friend that told me like, hey, this track should be on his and his label, and I was like, who? So yeah, we sent it out to them and it was picked up. So yeah, then I started to find like a sort of family in sound, at least like where I could start and base my, you know, base what I was playing at the clubs, you know. And it was still like small clubs in Sweden and bars and stuff, you know. And then I kind of moved on to a new sound, and always trying to like find the sound that I was interested in at the time, you know. I could never sit still at that time, and I still can't, I think. So I would never know what I'm doing next year, you know.
We'll be right back.
Open Your Eyes, the Style of Eye remix of Alex Metric and Steve Angelo's smash hit, right here on the UNS podcast. You start being released on these underground labels, singles, and EPs. When did you start getting approached by bigger labels, more mainstream record companies? Was this as you were becoming more comfortable with your own sound or trying to push the boundaries of whatever genre it was at the time that you were playing? Did you find that, you know, as your own sound developed, the opportunities got bigger and bigger?
Yeah, I think, you know, when I released my first album, that was probably the sort of a point where a new sort of audience came in on my stuff, and that really opened up to you know, remixing bigger names and doing a compilations on Ministry and stuff like that. So that really, I think I was, like you said, I think I was more comfortable with my sound then, and also that I sort of found my own voice, and, you know, having something to say that would matter at the time.
And I'm glad you mentioned asked to do remixes. Were you approached to craft a remix of the mega hit Save the World from the Swedish House Mafia, or was it something that you were passionate about yourself and really wanted to rework?
Yeah, first we talked a little bit about it, like because when I heard the track, I was like, this is gonna be an anthem, this is absolute anthem for the big rooms, you know. And I thought, like, I didn't really dare to ask at first, but then I thought, like, hell no, well, why not, you know. So I just dropped the line and said, hey, I want to remix it, because I had like an idea of what I could do with it. But then it was actually a coincidence that it all sort of ended up as it did, because we were running out of time. I thought I had 2 weeks, but it was 2 days, and I only had eight hours of studio time until a flight was leaving for Tokyo, you know. So I was like, shit, what do? We had like a marathon sure. in the studio with Carly, and that was the story.
Maybe we should back up a bit. I mean, the Swedish House Mafia, Sebastian Ingrosso, Steve Angelo, Axwell, they dominate the house industry, not only in Sweden, but throughout Europe. How did you become involved with that sect? Because they are, you know, wildly popular, and you are making your way through the underground labels into the mainstream. I wonder how your paths crossed.
I think, you know, when growing up in Sweden, and it's a small community, and in the dance world, you know, so and especially in Stockholm, you know, you sort of, if you go to these clubs, you meet these people, and Seb has always been very, you know, friendly and nice and supportive of my stuff, and he's been playing, like, him and Steve and Axwell has been playing my stuff for some time, you know. And it's it came pretty natural, you know, and just we had some studio sessions and, you know, had a good vibe going. And I think that sort of opened up, you know, I've been learning so much just by watching these guys, you know. They are, as you say, the sect is very, it's growing very big, you know. And but they're still the same guys anyway, you know, in the aspect of how they're acting towards friends and stuff. So it's really cool to follow what they're doing. Right.
boys, we don't care what they say, cause we are boys, we don't care what they say, cause we are boys, we don't care what they say, cause we are
We Are Boys, the new single from Style of I, out now on Refume. Let's finish up with Linus Eklo. You put out releases on The Classic and then John Dalbec's label. I want you to tell me how this latest track of yours, We Are Boys, before we even get into the track itself, did you know that you wanted to put out a release on Sebastian Ingrosso's label Refune, or did he sort of approach you and say, hey, you know, you've been creating all this music in various styles and stuff, and I want to pick up on the next thing you do? I wonder how that process works behind the scenes.
Yeah, it started last year, in early last year, with the track called Puss Puss, and it was like, He wanted to hear some music from me that he could release on Refune, and you know, I've never been sort of signed exclusively to any label, so thought it would be a really cool thing, you know, and because I would reach I think it was Refune is a very good vehicle, you know, so I sent him that and he liked it, so he released it, and then I think 6 months later, I sent him another track called Sex, which was also released this year in February, I think. And
sure, a big hit for you.
Oh yeah, that worked out well. It was so, I mean, with We Are Boys, it was where I think I played that track has been going maybe through Logic for at least 20 or 30 versions. It's been like, I wrote the first demo for it, I think 2 years ago. So he's been hearing it going over and over, like different stages and different versions here and there. And now I just think 1 week after I had my son, we had our son, I went into the studio and just like nailed this version that is released now. So it's been living with me like for a long time, you know, this track. So.
I'm sure. Yeah. I wonder, where did you get the idea for implementing this big, huge sing-along chorus? Was that the foundation on which you built the song, or did that come along later? Because that's such a prominent part of the track.
Yeah, it was built around that. It was the hook, the vocal hook is written by Adrian Lux, and he played it to me, and I was like, I want to try to do something with this, and so I built the track around that, and you know, I wanted to have that as a sort of base towards like what I was gonna do with the rest of the song. But there's actually a deleted verse and a deleted like second verse and a pre-chorus and stuff that's not on the original mix. So mm-hmm. We'll see if that's ever gonna be released. But I hope so, because it's a cool, the first version is pretty cool as well.
That's fantastic. And the track itself moves between tech house and minimal and builds up to this big brash electro sound. And they move back and forth between these styles fairly rapidly. Is the track sort of a reflection of how your own styles and sounds have shifted over the years, and now you can put out a track that encompasses all of them?
No, that's pretty. That's interesting point of view. I never thought about it, but you're right. It's actually, it goes all over the place in one tune, and it wasn't intentionally. But I think that I never had. With the buildup of this track, I never had a thought or a second thought about how things would you know, be arranged together. It was just like, it came pretty naturally. I think 30 minutes or something was the sort of when I lay out the chords and the melodies and stuff. So then it took like days and maybe weeks to finish the production. But yeah, just blending in the styles. From what I was liked, and then Seb told me this is rave, you know, this is a rave tune, and I was like, yeah, maybe.
are there any artists whom you'd like to see take a crack at remixing We Are Boys? Are there any artists out there who you really think could take your creative vision and then do something that's all their own, something unique, but would still stay true to the song and the passion that you have for it?
Yeah, I would love to see. I think, you know, there's a number of people that could definitely do a good job. I would love to see Bart Beamore and Harvard Bass do like a remix of it. And also, I don't know if you know Tom Starr from London. He's really good, and I would love for him to, you know, take a crack on it. And obviously, like, we were talking about like a Steve Angello edit of it, and that would be pretty awesome as well.
Certainly. Do you have plans to head back to the studio since this release, or are you about to set off on a number of club dates? Obviously, you've got a young son there, so you may not be too willing to jump on the road just yet, but do you have a tour in plans?
Yeah, well, I just finished like the summer gigs. It's been pretty busy this summer, so now I'm actually back in the studio and working on I think it's going to be end up as an EP, probably on Refune again, and that's what I'm doing for the next month, and also working on some side projects. But I'm heading over to the States pretty soon. In October I'm coming to San Francisco and San Diego and LA, and so I'm really looking forward to that. I'm always having a good laugh when I'm in the States.
I'm sure, and we're looking forward to seeing you in the States. Linus Eklo, Style of Vibe, thanks so much for being on the UNS podcast.
Thanks for having me, man.
That's going to do it for this week's UNS podcast. Special thanks go to Charlotte Sweeney with Your Army, and of course, my guest, Linus Eklo. His new single, We Are Boys, is available on iTunes now from Refune Records. We've got a ton of tickets that just went up on the UNS.com contest page. This Friday, you can win a pair of tickets to Flying Lotus in Boston or Digital Tape Machine in Brooklyn. Catch Empire of the Sun next week at the Congress Theater in Chicago, courtesy of C3 and React. And look at this, you can win Pretty Lights tickets for October 5th in South Bend, Bass Nectar in Bloomington, Illinois on October 1st, and then win a pair of tickets to his Bass Center 4 in Washington, D.C., on September 24th. Huge giveaways. All you have to do is go to theuns.com/contest to sign up. It's free and easy. Remember, today's episode was brought to you by The Workout, taking place this weekend, Thursday through Sunday, September 8th through the 11th, in Central Ohio. Line up tickets and information on the web at theworkoutfestival.com. Please visit theuns.com for news, artist profiles, and tour dates from across the electronic music spectrum. And go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Write us a review. Tell us what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the program, you'd like to be a guest on the UNS podcast, or you'd like to sponsor an episode, contact me at anand@theuns.com. That's ANAND @theuns.com. Catch you next week.